Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, August 24, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio in New York. Let's get right to it. Got a lot to get to today. We're going to be talking with Tim Kirkchin and with Sarah Lang. Some fun conversation about the mic'd up Freddie Freeman and whether or not the Indians should consider trading one of their star pitchers. The National, Steven Strasburg, is set for surgery after being placed on the 60-day injured list. He will undergo carpal tunnel surgery for his right pitching hand in the days ahead. The quote from Dave Martinez, his manager, he probably could have taken another shot, but we just needed to get it fixed. We don't want to prolong anything. I've heard the explosion of injured list numbers is remarkable. First 28 days of the season in 2018, there were 38 pitchers on the IL. In 2019, 41 pitchers on the IL. In 2020, 108, more than the last two seasons combined. 20 of those are coronavirus infections. I have heard from executives that they think a lot of the injuries are actually teams, players preferring to focus on 2020. Closer Nick Anderson became the latest Rays pitcher to land on the injured list. The beleaguered Tampa Bay Rays pitching staff lost Anderson. They currently, he is the ninth Rays pitcher currently on the injured list and sixth member of the bullpen. And yet the Rays continue to roll along. The Padres and the Astros, Zach Greinke was on the mound for Houston. And early on, he threw a really slow pitch.
Oh, 54. What?
That was awesome.
54.
I think he spun that too to get it back. No, he just lobbed it in there.
Grisham just has to smile. Wow.
Todd Callis and Jeff Blum on the Astros television network. And later during this outing, Greinke at one point took a seat on the field waiting for the groundskeepers to come and fix a big hole that had developed in the front part of the mound. In the end, however, those San Diego Padres found a way to win again.
Here's the payoff pitch. He does run, and the pitch is in the air out towards right center field. Reddick is on the move, still going back at the wall. He leaps. It is up and out. A home run for Manny. A two-run shot, and the Padres go in front 5-3 in the bottom of the eighth inning. Machado homers for a second consecutive day, and this one is absolutely huge.
From 97.3, the fan, the Giants beat the Diamondbacks 6-1. With help from the grandson of a Hall of Famer.
To the plate, and it's skied. Center field, hit it pretty well. Starling back at the wall, leaps, it's gone. Mike Yastrzemski, a home run on his birthday to put the Giants back on top, 2-1, straightaway center.
That from the Diamondbacks radio network. Yeah, Mike Yastrzemski, also a proud graduate of Vanderbilt University. Cubs beat the White Sox 2-1. Jose Abreu, though, continues to put on a show.
2-1 to Abreu, and the pitch now by Darvish. That's hit in the air into deep left field. Turning and watching, and this one is going to be way out of Wrigley Field. He's done it again. Jose Abreu is some kind of locked in, and his solo home run gives the White Sox a 1-0 lead here in the second inning. You got to be kidding me.
That from WGN. The Cubs won with a big hit from Kyle Schwarber.
Now the 1-2, Schwarber drives one in the air, deep right center. Back goes Robert. This ball's got a chance. Gone. Two-run homer, Kyle Schwarber. Cubs lead 2-1.
Pat Hughes on the Cubs radio network. On Sunday Night Baseball, the game-ending play, Phillies-Braves, Atlanta down two runs, Freddie Freeman at the plate, trying to put more hurt on the beleaguered Philadelphia bullpen, and this is what happened.
Freddie Freeman swing and a line drive, and that's a base hit out of the left center field. And over there to cut it off is Quinn. One run is in. There's the next runner. Throw to the plate. The tag and out at the plate. Dansby Swanson trying to score from first, and he couldn't do it. Cut down at the dish, and that is the way the ball game ends.
Boog Shambi on ESPN Radio. Now, Braves manager Brian Snitker came out and asked the umpires to check on whether or not Phillies catcher Andrew Knapp had blocked home plate. That review went against the Braves, and after the game, Snitker told reporters he was sitting there pretty good, but they're not calling that anymore. They need to take that off the book, talking about the collision rule, and just start blowing up catchers again. And a lot of frustration from Brian Snitker at the end of that game. Now, before we get to Tim and Sarah today, Fantasy Focus Football is back weekdays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time. Matthew Berry, Field Yates, Stefania Bell, and Mike Clare are here to help you dominate your fantasy league. Watch the show on YouTube, Twitter, or ESPN app, and listen to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to draft your team, compete with your friends, and take home the crown by signing up now at ESPN.com/fantasyfootball.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes, the clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Seam heads rejoice.
Noodle alert!
It's Timmy time.
Is this a great game or what?
With Tim Kirkchian on Baseball Tonight.
And Tim Kirkchian covers baseball for ESPN. Tim, how you doing on this Monday?
I'm well, Buster. How's it going?
I'm doing well. We had a fun Sunday night game that ended with that crazy play at home plate. The Phillies bullpen barely hanging on. But during the course of the Sunday night broadcast, Freddie Freeman again made the case for players to be mic'd up on the field. Of course, you were part of the broadcast in spring training with the great mic'd up moment of all time when Freddie Freeman narrated his trip around the bases trying to score from first base on a windblown pop-up into short center field. Well, last night, he was chatty again. First, this is Freddie Freeman chatting with the Phillies, and the second part of this is running towards second on a potential double play ball, and he's jokingly screaming at the middle infielders trying to intimidate them. Give a listen.
How are you? Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Andrew.
Have a good one today.
Whoa, whoa. Come here, Gene. Come here, D.D.
That wasn't scary enough for you? I wasn't yelling loud enough to scare him.
Well, later in the game, Alec Bohm, the rookie for the Philadelphia Phillies, hit his first major league homer. It was a titanic shot into the water and straightaway center field. And Freddie bumped into him running the bases. This was pretty cool.
It's a really nice first home run. It's a good story, too. Why is your ball waterlogged? Well, because I hit it 450 feet in dead center. Really nice. Congratulations.
Buster, if they were all like him, and I like the players, don't get me wrong, but if they were all like him, our jobs would be even better. He's such a great hitter, but he's such a playful, normal kind of guy. Greg Walker once told me he's the lowest maintenance great hitter I've ever seen, meaning you don't ever have to worry about Freddie. Freddie's got it figured out, and he always has. He's absolutely hilarious, which he showed again last night, proving that he takes the game seriously but doesn't mind having a chuckle once in a while. And I can tell you, Buster, you're right. That tour of the bases in spring training was by far my highlight of spring training, because as soon as the ball went up, two outs, he said, it's going to be in the wind. It's going to be in the wind. It looked like a routine pop-up. Somebody had to catch that. But because of the wind, because of the sun, he knew the center fielder, shortstop, and left fielder are going to have trouble with this ball. And he kept running the whole time saying, they're not going to catch this. They're not going to catch it. And then when he slid into home plate, safely. He looked right up at the press box. Chipper Jones is sitting right next to me and had the greatest smile and the greatest point you could ever have. And that's why we love Freddie Freeman. He gets it as much as any player in the game today.
Taylor, as I'm talking to Tim now, can you run down that clip and we'll play it right at the end of Tim's segment today? He's right. As he describes him, like, you know what? We need to play that clip again because it was the greatest. And he's so down to earth. I'll never forget, Tim, about 4 or 5 years ago, he'd been struggling for a while and then he started to hit. This was the year that we had that game in Fort Bragg. And I remember talking to him like, hey, you know what turned it around? He said, I stopped being an idiot and swinging at balls out of the strike zone. And he was just like, I was an idiot, and I just kept on trying to make things happen. And then once I stopped swinging the balls out of the zone, I got to be a better hitter. Duh. And that I just right. was laughing about Freddie that when he described himself that way.
Right. And when the famous, and it takes too long to tell, but the famous time he got trapped in his car during that snowstorm in Atlanta, and Chipper had to come in like a giant four-wheeler to bail him out. Otherwise, Freddie would have said, I was ready to sleep in my car. And he said, and there was a moment there where I wondered, am I going to make it through the night? And yet he told this story laughing like crazy. I guess he can laugh now, but he doesn't take himself very seriously until it's time to hit and play. And then he does. That's the kind of guy we're looking for. And he and Mookie Betts are the two best mic-ups that I've been around, and let's hope we can do more of that.
Yeah, and by the way, he's back physically. We talked to Brian Snitker, the Braves manager, before the game last night, and we talked about that moment when Freddie came back from coronavirus and spoke to reporters, and he was very tearful, and he described his high fever. And Brian said to us last night, he said, that took a lot out of him. But clearly he's back. Going into that game last night, in the previous 13 games, he'd hit .383 with an OPS of .1196. He was almost the hero again last night before the final out of the game at home plate. All right, trade deadline is a week from today. It's the strangest trade deadline ever. A lot of teams, Tim, I think are just going to sit it out, or they're going to do very minimal type things because of the financial uncertainty, because we don't even know if there's going to be a vaccine. We don't know if they're going to be fans in the stands in 2021. But I was not surprised. I thought it was a good move for the Phillies to get Heath Embry, who was terrific last night against the Braves, and Brandon Workman, who's had a couple of rough first days, but I think someone who is certainly an upgrade over what they had.
Yeah, they had to do something, Buster. Our pal Bonds, Mike Lanzani, looked this up. That, and you know this, going into last night's game, the OPS against the Phillies bullpen from the ninth inning on this year was 1.098, which is even higher than Lou Gehrig's career OPS. So wow. If you look at it that way, everyone who came to bat against the Phillies bullpen ninth inning or later this year was better than Lou Gehrig. That's how hard hit that bullpen has been. They had to do something. Workman had a really nice year last year. Embry's got some really good stuff. So if you're going to make the playoffs this year, the back of the bullpen had to be upgraded significantly. And maybe still more needs to be done, but they picked up two useful arms, and at least they won last night's game with one of them.
The Braves are a team that certainly could use an upgrade in the rotation. And Tim, when I went on my walk this morning, I sort of puzzled over, you know, which guys could become available. And a name absolutely jumps out at me that I'm thinking, you know what? It makes a lot of sense, not only for the team that has him to trade him, but also for a team like the Braves or the Dodgers or the Yankees to make the investment and go and get this guy. And that's Mike Clevenger of the Cleveland Indians, who we know the Indians during the course of the winter talked to the Dodgers about a possible deal. Clevenger at the end of the season, assuming that they don't hold him out for the rest of the year because of the health and safety protocol violations. And I think they'll eventually bring him back. Clevenger would have 4+ years of service time. He turns 30 in December. He's not a 23-year-old, 24-year-old guy like Shane Bieber. He's got a little bit of age on him. He's a terrific pitcher. And look, teams are struggling like crazy right now to assess value and to determine value. I think knowing that an acquiring team would control him for 2 more years after this year, in addition to helping out in 2020, I think he might be an outlier. Like, I think some team might be willing to give up something good for him And the Indians have a wealth of starting pitching. I'm sure you saw that kid pitch for them over the weekend. He was unbelievable. So if I'm the Indians and I was already sort of open to the idea of trying to maximize on Clevenger's value, trade value at some point, I'd certainly be in listen mode at a time when teams like the Braves could really use someone like Clevenger's, a terrific pitcher.
Right. And normally I would tell you you're crazy, Buster, because this kid is really good. And you don't trade somebody because he made a mistake and was a bad teammate with one mistake that he made. You don't trade that guy. However, Tristan McKenzie came up and became the eighth pitcher ever to strike out 10 and allow two or fewer hits in his major league debut. The ERA for that club is 2.76, I think. They have a wealth of pitching riches, which means they could trade Mike Clevenger and get something really good in return. And Buster, I think they can win the World Series if they could score a few more runs. So trade him, get Michael Conforto. That's just a name I'm making up. They got to go get a hitter. And Mike Clevenger can bring a hitter, a quality, maybe middle-of-the-order hitter back in a deal. Now, I'm not saying the Mets would make that trade. I'm not saying anyone would make that trade. But you have to look at it now. When you haven't won the World Series since 1948, you've got a great pitching staff. You desperately need an outfielder that can hit. I would at least look into it if I were the Indians. And, of course, 2 weeks ago I would have said, don't trade that guy under any circumstance.
Yeah, and you mentioned Tristan. I mean, on Saturday, that's a guy that when you watch that performance, I was just stunned, Tim, by how under control he was. You know, to see a young pitcher who just had that mound presence. And I reached out to some Indians people afterward, and I said, was that just facing the Tigers, a bad team? And I got back, no, the kid is off the charts. And in his post-game interview, he was off the charts. His stuff was off the charts. Now, he's unusual looking. He's like 6'5". He looks like he weighs about 110. He kind of reminds me of, and I'm not saying deliveries this way, but in terms of body type, you remember young Ramon Martinez. It looked like a human slingshot, but he is in command.
Yeah, he was really good. By the way, Ramon Martinez had the longest forearms of any pitcher I've ever seen. And I didn't notice it right away. Eric Karras told me after I met Ramon, this is 30 years ago, whatever. He said, did you look at his forearms? I went back and looked. He's got the longest forearms I've ever seen. So that whip action that he would get on his curveballs because his arms in the forearm were longer than any other pitcher. But you're right. Tristan McKenzie reminded me a little bit of him because he's so skinny. And I know when you got all arms and legs flying at you like that as a hitter, it can be disconcerting. Just another really good pitcher added to that great staff in Cleveland.
There are a lot of times when you see pitchers that tall and that skinny, it looks like they're struggling to command their bodies, you know, put all the parts together. That wasn't the case. I mean, he was
right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Go ahead.
Right. When you're a great athlete, you can do that. And you always worry about a tall pitcher. Are the moving parts going to work? And clearly they do on this kid.
All right, the Oakland Athletics, they needed just 29 games to reach 20 wins this season. That's their fewest games to reach 20 wins since they got there with 26 in 1990, last year they were in a World Series appearance. They've had 4 walk-off wins this season, most in Major League Baseball. As of today, could you make the case they're the best team in baseball?
They're the best team in the American League. I think the Dodgers are better than anyone, not just record-wise, but the Dodgers are loaded. But the A's are the best team in the American League, and even when the Yankees get healthy, we might still be saying that. Buster, you know this. They can hit the ball out of the ballpark. They have a great infield defense. They have power arms in the rotation, Frankie Montas and others. And their bullpen is loaded with really good, flexible pitchers who can pitch in any situation. Jesus Luzardo is going to be a star. And when you've got two corner guys, Matt Chapman and Matt Olson, who are MVP candidates, are going to be like every year and play great defense and have the baseball IQ that those guys have. That's another reason to love the A's right now.
All right. talk about the San Diego Padres. I'll just put it on a tee for you.
I think after the White Sox, Buster, if there's a game on tonight, I'm watching the Padres. That's how exciting they have been so far. And of course, it starts with the shortstop. He missed out on something last night, Buster. If he had hit a homer yesterday as a shortstop, he would have had more home runs through 30 games than any shortstop in the history of baseball. And Tatis is doing this while being, so far at least, a great defensive shortstop who can run like the wind and plays with great enthusiasm. And as long as they follow that kid around, they have a chance. But, you know, Denelson Lamet, people don't even know who he is. That guy is really good. And you put him with Chris Paddock at the top of that rotation. I think the big concern is Kirby Yates is probably going to be out for the year. But that team is really fun to watch. And, man, do they have some firepower in that lineup.
That's a team, Tim, that I think should take a run at Clevinger because they've got a loaded minor league system. You know, these two teams, the Indians and the Padres, have dealt before. Brad Hand, that to me would be a natural match. You put Clevinger on that Padre team, that would make people take notice.
Absolutely. I just think the Indians are going to want a quality major league hitter in return, and I just don't think the Padres are going to do that right now. But you're right. They would love to have Mike Clevinger. Seriously, who wouldn't? That guy is so good.
Chicago White Sox, you mentioned them. What a weekend they had.
Buster, they had 27 homers in seven games, in a seven-game span. No team in Major League history had ever done that. Jose Abreu became the first player in White Sox history to hit five homers in two games. No one's ever done that for the White Sox. And then he tied a major league record with six homers in a three-game series. Only four other guys had done that. I had a GM tell me the other day, Buster, if I'm taking just the everyday lineup, I'm taking the White Sox over any team in Major League Baseball, given how much power is there, speed is there, youth is there, and a bunch of those guys are locked up for a long time. And like I said, if I'm watching 15 games today or any day, and I have to pick one game to watch, I'm watching the White Sox. That's how exciting they are right now.
All right. Every time we've seen major leaguers go to Williamsport and play the Little League Classic and interact with the Little Leaguers, it is awesome. They all do a good job. But I must tell you that yesterday when the announcement came out that next year Little League Classic will be the Indians playing against the Angels, I thought, okay, those are the all-time two headliners at the Little League Classic, Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. That's absolutely perfect. I could throw Francisco Lindor in there, but I don't think he's going to be with the Indians next year. But Trout and Ohtani in Williamsport, Tim, that is going to be so much fun because Mike Trout at heart, he's still 10 years old.
Right. He's the perfect guy to go to Williamsport. He's the best player in the game. He's the face of the game, and he's still got that aw shucks, you know, boyhood enthusiasm, which just radiates every single day, and it will even more when he goes to Williamsport. And then, of course, we'll have Joe Maddon, who's a Pennsylvania guy. I talked to him the other day about potentially going back. He was so excited about that. Any place Tito Francona goes, he makes it better. But I'll tell you, Buster, I'm not sure we'll have a better moment than last year when I saw Chris Archer on the field. And I asked him, what was the bus ride like in with the kids? And he goes, it was great. He said, one of the kids came up to me, Chris Archer said, and said, hey, aren't you the guy that gives up all the home runs? And Chris Archer goes, yeah, that's me. But it's so funny how honest our kids are. And it was so beautiful that instead of Chris Archer getting upset, he recognized that this kid was being playful and was right at the same time.
All right, Tim, thanks for doing this.
Okay, Buster, I'll talk to you soon. Good luck.
And as we roll out, let's hear Freddie Freeman from spring training.
Oh, here we go. Oh, watch this. There's wind, boys. There's wind. There's wind. There's wind.
He's right.
He's going to score.
Right.
There's wind.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Numbers Game.
Sarah Langs is a reporter and producer for MLB.com. And Sarah, as we start, I'm going to order you to rank these three teams in terms of watchability right now. White Sox, Padres, Athletics, you got to go 1, 2, 3.
Oh, my gosh. That's impossible. Oh, my goodness. That is the moment you said order you, I was like, this is going to be really difficult. Oh, my gosh. Okay, sorry to the A's, but 1 and 2 is either the White Sox or the Padres. I feel like it goes back and forth every day. Like, the White Sox hit a home run, but then the Padres hit a grand slam. And, of course, those are the two first teams in numbers game today, too. So that gives you all you need to know. But I'll go White Sox 1 because I miss Chicago a lot, and then Padres 2. Sorry, San Diego. And A's 3, and it's nothing against any of them because it's a three-way tie, and they're so much fun.
Sarah, a university, proud University of Chicago grad, which is the context for that comment that you just made. Yeah, but I've been following your Twitter feed in recent days. And I've been so excited about watching those teams and putting up numbers. Like, okay, I'm going to put her on the spot. All right, let's play the numbers game.
Number 3.
So number 3 is 4. So speaking of two of those teams, so 4 is for the number of runs that score on a grand slam. So on Saturday, the Padres became the first team in MLB history with 5 grand slams in a 6-game span. And that was 2 days after becoming the only team to hit a grand slam in 4 straight games on Thursday. They're the 5th team with 6 grand slams in a month, and August is not over yet, and I fully expect them to break that record and hit 7 this month. And as you were saying, they're just so much fun. They're 18-12. It's the first time they've been in 6 or more games above 500, at least 20 games into a season, since the end of the 2010 season when they finished 90-72 but did not make the playoffs. They won 7 straight games for the first time since June 2013. I mean, they are on all cylinders right now and so much fun to watch.
Number 2.
So number 2 is 6. So now we get to the White Sox. So Jose Abreu hit 6 home runs in the White Sox 3-game series against the Cubs this weekend, which was a lot of fun to watch again and really exciting for the city of Chicago, if you ask me. And so he had a home run in 4 straight at-bats from Saturday into Sunday, which is tied for the MLB record. A bunch of guys have done that. Nobody's had 5 straight. We were all hoping in that next at-bat, and then he grounded out. But he hit 6 home runs in a series, which is tied for the most by a player in a 3-game series since at least 1913. First guy to do it since Hee-Seop Choi in 2005. Sean Green did it in 2002, Alex Rodriguez did it in 2002, and Barry Bonds did it in 2001. It's also the most home runs by any White Sox player in any series of any length, so not just a 3-game series, in franchise history. And the White Sox hit 27 home runs over a 7-game span that ended on through Saturday, which is the most in a 7-game span in MLB history.
Number 1.
Number 1 is 3. So this was something I looked into. I believe it was last Monday, and it was so much fun that I think I've updated it every single day since. This is about Mookie Betts. So Mookie Betts has 3 swing and misses on pitches in the zone this year out of 126 swings. So he's swung 126 times at a pitch that was in the strike zone, and he's only missed 3 times. And last Monday, it was 1. And then Yusei Kikuchi got him to miss on 2 pitches in the zone, I think on Friday, whenever he pitched. That's a 97.6% in-zone contact rate, and he's also slugging .664. He hit another 2 home runs yesterday. So I looked into this because you don't normally get those 2 things going together, that outstanding contact and slugging the ball. So the highest in-zone contact rate by any qualified hitter in a full season in the pitch tracking era, which is since 2008, is 98.7%. But it was by Marco Scudero in 2012 and Ben Revere in 2014, both of them. But they slugged .405 for Scudero and .361 for Revere. Wow. So the point here is that that's not what Mookie Betts is doing. So there have been 81 qualified hitters who've had an in-zone contact rate above at least 95 in that span. Only one of them slugged above 600, and only seven were even above 500 in that span. So the only one in the 600s, which is what Mookie is on pace to be doing right now, was Albert Pujols in 2008 when he won the MVP. He slugged 653, and he had a 96.2% in zone contact rate. I know that's a lot of numbers, maybe even more so than in a normal numbers game, but we need to recognize just how outstanding Mookie Betts has been this year.
Pure contact. I got two for you before you go. I was trying to make the case to Tim that I do think that while a lot of players you couldn't get equal value for in this strange year of 2020, the Indians should take Mike Clevinger into the market and see what they could get. What do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, we saw Tristan McKenzie with his 10 strikeout debut the other night. They have pitching. This is a team that seems to perpetually have more pitching and more pitching depth. And they absolutely need offense. I mean, they just need to get that team going in any way they can. They have a lot of great hitters, but it's not all gelling and working. They're last in the majors in slugging percentage with that outstanding pitching staff. And even if you were to take Clevinger out of it, obviously he hasn't pitched for them in a couple of weeks now. We know that they're still pitching really well. And I think that could really benefit the team.
And I'm going to give you a question that might alienate some of the folks back in Chicago, and I apologize. Well, no, I'm actually teeing you up on it, so I can't apologize. This conversation started about whether or not the White Sox may own Chicago, and my perspective is, no, it doesn't matter if the White Sox win the World Series, as they did, 15 years ago, it's always going to be a Cubs town. What's your take?
Oh, my gosh. I've seen this conversation going on. I understand it. I think that, you know, I think it would be different if we had fans in the stands. I think that if there were fans at Wrigley Field this weekend, there were White Sox fans there, especially with those first two games as the White Sox hit all of those home runs against the Cubs, then maybe we'd start to get that energy of, you know, maybe this really is a White Sox town. But yeah, I mean, you know, if you take even the specific baseball conversation out of it, when tourists go to Chicago, they go to Wrigley. I think they should go to Guaranteed Rate, but they go to Wrigley. You see them in the stands there. And, you know, I think that for whatever reason, they seem to have that sort of, you know, number or whatever ownership over how the city is. But I will forever advertise to go down to 35th Street and go see the White Sox because that's what I love to do so much in college. But it's just really fun for both teams to be good at the same time. I know Jason Benetti had a great tweet after the game, and I think he just said, thank you for being such a great baseball town, Chicago. And it's really, really exciting to see them both being good at the same time like this.
Yeah, we got to get Jason on the podcast sometime this week for sure. All right, Sarah, thanks for doing this.
Thanks so much for having me, Buster.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster, Bleacher Tweets. For Monday, first one up, Brian Simpson writes in, hey, Buster, can you explain this move by Greinke? Is it illegal? Stall technique? Have you ever seen this before in an inning where a pitcher is getting knocked around? Can we dive a little bit deeper into your thoughts here, Buster?
Yeah, I've seen, look, it's not unusual when you have a pitcher complain about a hole developing in the mound. I remember covering a game when I was at the New York Times. David Cone was pitching against LaTroy Hawkins, and LaTroy Hawkins had these massive feet. I want to say it's like size 15 or 16. And so by about the third inning, David Cone felt like he was falling into a gulch of some kind. And so they would have to bring out the groundskeepers to work on the mound. And you know what, if you're an old pro like Greinke and maybe the day's not going well and you need a little bit of a break, that's not a bad thing, right? That's like a veteran NFL player who suddenly just, I'm kind of sore, and then to catch his breath. But I suspect in Greinke's case, because apparently there's been some issues with this particular mound before, that he was legitimately bothered by the hole in the mound. That is not unusual.
Yeah, I don't think it was him just being, I need a break from getting smacked around.
No.
It looked legitimate. They brought the whole team out there. I mean, come on.
Yep.
Jacob Stack writes in at Jacob Stack 11. Kershaw had a vintage performance against the Mariners using more curveballs. Is that the secret to his resurgence, or is the increased velocity going to make him fall back in love with the slider?
I think it's a combination of things. It's very interesting in talking with people around baseball. They're like, God, he looks bigger. Like, he looks stronger. Whatever Clayton is doing in his training, I think that's helped him push his velocity up. But there's also no doubt, to your point, Jacob, that the percentage of curveballs and sliders that he's been throwing has gone up. And Clayton is someone who, you know what, if he's having success with something, and for years that was pitching inside with his fastball, if he's having success with something, he'll stay with it. And right now he's throwing the lowest percentage of fastballs in his career. It's something around 38, 39%. He's throwing a higher percentage of sliders, actually, and I'm sure he'll stick with that.
Next up, Jim Misner at Jim Misner 87 writes, and hey guys, with all the talk about the unwritten rules lately, are there any you are in favor of? For example, no bunting to break up a perfect game.
That one in particular, I never had a problem with. I didn't know what the whining was. Like a hitter who's standing at the plate is for somehow have to take away part of his arsenal is because of an unwritten rule. I never understood that one, but certainly a lot of players feel that way. I'd say one that is still I agree with. I think when you hit a home run, you shouldn't stare down the pitcher. I never liked that. You want to be happy about hitting a home run, that's great, but don't stick it in his face. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you on the bunting one. I mean, you play to win the game. So I don't understand any of the stuff. Like it makes no sense to me. It would not be tolerated in any other sport. Baseball, get with it.
Let me give you one that I've never understood, and it was just coincidentally last week when before our Sunday night game, it was at Yankee Stadium, and ESPN was running the Bill Simmons documentary on the Red Sox winning the 2004 World Series and coming back against the Yankees in that championship series. You know, Curt Schilling had that procedure done on his ankle, and he wasn't right. And I, to this day, don't know why the Yankees didn't bunt on him. And it was just like this weird thing about, well, you know, that wouldn't be, you know, the right thing to do, or it wouldn't be something. But I'm like, how in the world does a pitcher have a torn up ankle and not one player tries to drop a bunt on him? I didn't get that. You're trying to do everything you can to take advantage of his weakness.
Even in an ALCS, too. That's remarkable.
Yes.
That's pretty crazy. Let's go to the last one for today. Tim Continenza writes, and Buster, you can only have one of these two pitchers for the next five seasons, either Garrett Cole or Shane Bieber. Who do you pick?
Well, I bet you if you were to ask front offices, general managers, 30 out of 30 would tell you Shane Bieber. And you know why? Because Garrett Cole's going to make a lot more money. He's going to be a lot more expensive. Plus, Shane Bieber's younger. I would take Shane Bieber. I think it's an easy choice because of the salaries. There's no question his stuff is as dominant. I love this number I looked up the other day. He had struck out his first 150 batters he'd faced this year. Bieber had struck out 43%. And Taylor, think about this number. Only 15 times has a batter come to the plate against him with a runner in scoring position, and those hitters are 0-for-15 with 9 strikeouts.
Oh, man.
He's pretty good right now.
Pretty good, Buster. These Bleacher tweets are pretty good as well. Thanks for writing in, everyone. Loved all the – we got so many questions, and Buster, I feel like every time – it happens a lot on Mondays, but we say before we get started, like, oh, so much to talk about. It's the great beauty of this short season. Everyone's playing every day, and it's awesome. I'm loving it.
Yeah, 100%. That's it for today. My thanks to Sarah, to Tim, and to Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we have to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.